This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode, What We Call Things. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. For people who stutter, little things like ordering a cup of coffee can be exhausting. Sentences take longer to say, sometimes much longer, and people aren't always patient. So it seems like trying to get rid of your stutter would be really important. But not everybody's on board with that idea. Should we stop calling stuttering a speech impediment? Barry Yeoman has more.
When I'm locked in my bedroom, alone and relaxed, recording narration for the radio, I pretty much sound like this. One word flows from the next, like many of you speak every day. But in the wild, when I'm out interviewing folks, I often sound more like this.
You catch oysters, right?
Yes, sir.
What's your name?
I know what I want to say and how to articulate the sounds, but when I try to talk, my face clenches and the words come out in repetitive machine gun bursts or dissolve into silence. Stuttering is more than the audible symptoms. It's often coupled with shame and isolation. My friend Emma Alpern speaks for many of us who stutter when she describes her childhood.
Whenever I blew out a candle on the birthday cake or made a wish in a fountain or anything like that, I always made the same wish, which was to not stutter anymore. So it was just my constant overarching goal in speech therapy and just in life in general is to not stutter.
Compounding the distress for me was the unknowability of stuttering. It was a scientific black hole for much of my life. That's now changing. Researchers are untangling both the genetics and the brain chemistry of people who stutter. They've made progress in drug development, looking at medications that might alter that chemistry and reduce the stuttering. Many of my peers who stutter are excited about this. From the time we were children, we were taught that stuttering would hold us back in life and that the only way forward was not to stutter. That's why there's a persistent hope for some breakthrough that will bring us a cure. But some of us, including myself, believe we should rethink the assumption that stuttering is a defect that needs to be eradicated. I wanted to talk with others who share this view. So on a Sunday morning, I go to a conference in New York, sponsored by a group called NYC Stutters. An actor named Mark Winsky sets the tone for the day. He gathers us into a circle. Some of us feel at home here, safe among friends. Others are new and nervous. Mark tells us that, no matter why we came and how we're feeling.
It's all right. There are no judgments.
Mark asks for volunteers to start improvising movements and sounds. Then he invites the rest of us to join in with our own sounds. As people who grew up hating how we talked, it's a treat to have fun with our voices.
And one by one, as soon as you feel the impulse to jump in. Follow the impulse. If you feel it, go. Change it up too. A could be a leg.
Then we settle into the conversation. This is a room full of people who have virtually nothing in common but our stutters. There are people who long for the cure. Their lives have been hard, and they just want their stutters to go away. And there are others, like my friend Chris, who have a different vision.
My name is Chris Constantino. I'm an assistant professor in communication sciences and disorders at Florida State University.
Chris is one of the speakers at the conference. He wrote a journal article suggesting that people who stutter should embrace an idea called neurodiversity. The theory is that humans have natural variations in how our brains work, and that we should honor many of those differences rather than labeling them pathologies, problems. The term originated in the autism community, but many groups have championed similar ideas. For example, some deaf people have rejected cochlear implants, which make it possible for them to interpret sound. They say that deafness is a culture worth preserving, and gay and lesbian activists led the charge against therapies aimed at turning people straight. For those who stutter, neurodiversity doesn't just mean tolerating our speech patterns. Rather, it means viewing stuttering as an advantage. For example, as something that can bring people closer by encouraging honest conversations.
How I like to see stuttering is it's as if we're temporarily stripped of our clothing, right? We're temporarily naked, and we don't have control over when we're forced to be vulnerable. However, the more time you spend defenseless with others, the more chances you have to connect deeply with somebody, because they've seen you and they've seen all of you, and all they need to do is reciprocate. All they need to do is strip down too. And by stuttering, we give them that opportunity.
Emma Alpern, my friend who spent so much of her childhood wishing for a cure, helped organize the New York conference. She says events like this have helped shift her priorities.
I really don't want to begrudge any stutterer for wanting to not stutter. It's very difficult. I get it. To me, it feels a little bit eugenic. I don't like the idea of us being wiped out. I mean, I found an incredible community, and stuttering has brought a lot of meaning to my life. Maybe what I really want to say is that I want us to be having deeper conversations about stuttering, and I think it's hard to have them when we are simultaneously putting our resources toward a cure.
I see Emma's point. The country's main organization for people who stutter has the word cure in its vision statement. That makes it harder to talk about the value of stuttering, and that conflict can hit you on a personal level too. Trying not to stutter can feel like full-time work. During the 20 years I went to speech therapy, there were all these homework assignments that took hours each week. I would call telephone operators and hotel reservation lines, practicing the techniques I had learned and hoping not to stumble. But in a 24-hour day, you can only devote so much energy to thinking about how you talk. When I quit seeking fluency, it freed me up to shift that energy elsewhere. Some of my friends have had similar experiences. Take George DeQuilla, an engineer at the investment bank Goldman Sachs. He's a snazzy guy, cool glasses, hair just right. His smile is intense. So is his stutter, but he doesn't shrink away from it. He says this was not always the case.
Yeah, so as a child, probably up till I was 28, yes, I would have just wanted to get rid of it, like, as quickly as I could.
It took both a speech therapist and a counselor to convince George to rethink his fluency quest. By the time he joined Goldman Sachs in 2015, at the age of 31, he was starting to think of his stutter as an asset, a challenge that toughened him for the competitive world of Wall Street.
Goldman is a very intense culture of some really smart and really driven people. What I only understood once I came here was that my stuttering journey was so damn tough. That really gave me that gift of that really unrelenting drive.
I met George at his New York office building. From the 36th floor, we had a sweeping view across the Hudson River to the Statue of Liberty. As we sat down to talk, his colleague, attorney Vanessa Kelly Smith, joined us. Vanessa identifies as deaf. She first met George over coffee in 2017.
Our stories were very, very similar in that we had spent a significant portion of our adult life not really comfortable with our disability or fully inhabiting it.
Right.
And I saw George as just someone who was just incredibly comfortable in his skin. We had very similar visions of what we wanted to do with our advocacy, which is to reframe how disability is seen and to talk more about the strengths that come from having a disability.
One of George's goals is to help others navigate the corporate job market. He's organized mock job interview days for people who stutter. George's colleagues went through a training. They learned the science of stuttering, how people manage it, and how to listen respectfully.
So, like, the point of the day was interviews, but it was really more like tearing down, like, the wall, all that I know, that all that I, like, used to have of just, I was absolutely scared. So that inside, like the walls of a company, that there wouldn't be any acceptance of my stuttering, which was not true.
George says he was afraid that people wouldn't take the time to listen. He was wrong. They were patient, and they valued him. A few months after his hire, George was promoted to vice president. Leaving his office, I thought about what stuttering has given me. Like George, I have that unrelenting drive, the resolve to prove myself by succeeding professionally. My conversations are more intimate because of my stutter, and I have a community that embodies that drive and that intimacy. With all those gains, it's hard these days to think of my stutter as a defect.